Chapter 90. Eternal. Mirel had never watched the sky with such earnestness in her entire life. Over 1 year had passed since she had been visited by Ethan, cowled and bearded in disguise. She hated him and would have cast him from her sight, but he had come with an extraordinary mission: to hand her a sword that would kill Mikik in his cage. It was the sword that would avenge the blood of her daughter, a sword of power formed by the virtue of Jen's blood. Along with it came the training stones Jen had gifted to her daughter, with instructions to wear them so that Samian might give her the basic skill with the blade that she would need to make the killing stroke. "Jen will come for you next year," Ethan had told her, "when the first snow falls." She wore the training stones for 2 weeks, until she could manage a solid thrust, and then announced to the world the date of Mikik's execution. On a golden fall day over a year before, all who could fit in the courtyard watched her stride from the chapel at dawn, face solemn. Mikik flinched when he saw the blade, his cruel features twisted in the agony of his torment. "For the Shalane," was all Mirel had heart to say. Extending her arm as she had been taught, she plunged the blade into Mikik's gut. The dark god had closed his eyes and sneered before disintegrating in an explosion of light. The crowd had cheered and would have pressed her into some speech, but she had no more words to speak that day. She had returned to her chambers to mourn afresh, while the rest of the world feasted for a week. And so began the longest year of her life, and the most agonizing autumn. While she waited for Jen's return, she had acquiesced to the aristocracy and agreed to stay on as regent to be an anchor in Aldrin McMere's absence. There were funerals to attend, a city to rebuild, and alliances to renew. She knew her familiar face and familiar ways were needed, and to dull her own pain she used work to bury her grief. The spring took her to Tolnor for the coronation of Gerund Kildan. He and his lovely Mina were striking in their royal garb of deep red and gold. While it was a joyous affair, free of demons and dark gods, Mirel felt empty and alone without the people she loved best in the world, and she left a few days early under the pretense of needing to address Rugoth's pressing concerns. After she returned home, the regency of Rugoth tried to press her into service as the first mother of Rugoth, but without Jen and without her daughter, she simply had no taste for it. Only one desire burned in her heart: to fulfill her lifelong ambition to be a proper wife and to relive the joy of motherhood again. And there was only one man she would accept to walk with her in those desires, a man she pined for on some days and was furious with on others. How dare he leave her for a year? How dare he leave Rugoth without his steadying presence? How dare he not come to see the end of Mikik? While she understood Jen's reasons for staying away, and more than understood his grief, she had desperately needed him. She still did. She had cried her tears for her daughter, she had done her duty for her nation, and she had waited long enough without any word. The loss of the Shalane had carved a hole in her heart to add to the loneliness that already gaped open wide there. It needed filling, and while Jen had promised to come for her, he hadn't promised to love her or to wed her. The mystery and uncertainty nearly drove her mad as she wheeled Kihol to hurtle forward for the warm summer winds to cool and leach the green out of the leaves. Now she watched the leaves jostling in the wind and begged them to dry and fall, pulling one from every branch she passed to hasten the process. Now, with the branches mostly bare, she leaned on the balcony of the great hall in the late afternoon, shawl wrapped around her shoulders as a thick mass of dark clouds crawled toward the sun, bringing a biting chill that kicked up and rustled her hair and cooled her face. Sweet coldness it was to her. She dressed her best every day since the breezes began to cool, ready for that familiar voice and that familiar step. How he would come, she didn't know or care. Where they would go, she could guess, for she longed to see the place where her daughter had died, or perhaps still lived, but in a way she couldn't now understand. "Shall I fetch your cloak, milady?" Volney asked. "No," she said, turning to regard him. He had been faithful to Jen's charge to protect her, even though Mirel no longer saw the necessity of his protection. Her only enemies now lived inside her, the doubt and fear she had to beat away with every sunrise and sunset. The dark hours in her bed were the worst, and she nearly despised her bedchambers for the hopeful longings and dreadful imaginings they provoked within her, tearing her apart. The worst was the feeling of age that she had never felt. While the virtue of the breeding of the Shalanes blessed her with a youthful appearance, she knew it would not last. Jen would never age, eternally a man in his youth. One day she would wake up and look like his mother, and she wondered how he or she would deal with the disparity. Another blast of chill wind squinted her eyes, this one truly numbing. The clouds spilled over the sun, ending whatever warmth was left in the air. "It is here," she thought. "He had best keep his promise, or I will hunt him down and make him regret it." Volney let out an audible gasp as the frigid air washed over him. Mirel smiled. He was such a contrast to Jen. With no wars to fight and with home and hearth putting good food in his mouth, Volney's uniform had tightened and his face had filled out. Family life suited him, and Mirel hoped he would take what rewards and treasure were his and be with his wife and son. They couldn't ask for a kinder father. Something cold touched her face and she looked up, finding the swirling flakes descending upon them, driven by the wind. She lifted a hand before her and a flake fell upon it and melted under her heat. It had come. Winter, with its first snow, was upon them. He would come now. He had promised he would, and she would not let him break his promise. Reasserting her more confident nature, she turned away from the balustrade just as a brilliant, shimmering field of blue appeared behind Volney, who jumped back and drew his sword. Mirel crossed her arms in front of her and waited, a thrill building inside her. Quickly she loosened her hair the way Jen liked it and smoothed her dress over her curves. "Were you expecting this?" Volney asked, noting her distinct lack of anxiety.
"Yes, be at ease."
He didn't sheathe his sword, but his body relaxed. And finally he came. He dressed not as a king or a soldier, but as someone who had wandered the wild. Mirel hardly cared, taking in his clean-shaven face and intelligent, sober eyes. But his smile was all she needed, and she fell into his extended arms, forgetting all the bouts of ill will she had suffered over his neglect. He kissed her hair and then took her hand, turning toward Volney.
"Your work is done, my friend," Jen said. "Put your sword away. Go home and never take it up again. Thank you for all you have done."
"It has been an honor, Jen, Lady Mirel. I will always think of you." He bowed and left. Jen turned her toward the portal.
"Are you ready?"
"I've been ready for a long time, Jen," she said, choking on the words and stifling tears. "I am ready."
He led her forward through the shimmering portal, and in an instant they stepped out into warmer air and clearer skies upon the bridge across the lake of Elder Lurimora. The portal shut behind them, and Mirel gazed in wonder at the splendor of the city, now even more vibrant and alive than when the bedraggled survivors of the caravan had set foot upon it. The light of the afternoon sun painted warmth and health on every building and hillside. The blossoms of the city opened wide to its light. It felt vibrant and whole, and while she could not explain it, it felt intimately familiar.
"She is here, isn't she?" Mirel asked reverently.
"She is," Jen said. "I hope this can bring you some comfort. If you want to feel close to your daughter, she is always here, and always will be."
Mirel nodded, unsure of how to feel. The whole notion was odd, but beautiful in its way. She grabbed Jen's arm and pulled in close.
"Thank you for coming for me. I have missed you terribly."
"And I you. I'm sorry to have been gone during such a hard time. It was hard for me, too. I regret it if I caused you pain, but I haven't been idle. I haven't been avoiding you. I just needed to think. I needed to sort out what good I could do with the rest of a long life ahead of me. Maywen tells me I need to return as a king, but that isn't what is in my heart."
Mirel nodded in understanding, not wanting to pry or force him to explain everything. Being near him and being in Elder Lurimora were enough for now. As they neared the opposite shore, the rich scent of the blossoms greeted her, invigorating and refreshing her spirit. The chirp of a bird or the soft stirring of the trees were the only noises besides theirs, the blessed silence of the place washing away her cares. Whatever would come, and she would be content.
"I have some explaining to do," Jen said. "I need to show you something."
Jen guided her toward the Hall of Three Moons, and Mirel tried to push away her unpleasant memories of the place. Watching the Shalane wedge her, Tan had hurt, and leaving Jen behind, bound to the floor by magic, had filled her with fury. But even as these thoughts sought to overwhelm her, something soothed her. It was as if no dark thought could prevail in Elder Lurimora, the city casting out every care. Something was stronger about the city than it had been the first time she came, and Mirel wondered why. But what she saw at the center of the floor turned her attention outward. Three piles of blackened rocks sat in the beautiful chamber, illuminated by the sunlight from the circular dome in the ceiling.
"Have you been collecting rocks?" Mirel asked.
"Yes. Maywin and I have brought as many as we could find to this place."
"Why?"
"They are rocks from Duam, Min, and Triss, chunks that fell to the ground at the death of Elder Lurimora. They possess great magic."
Mirel understood.
"So this is what you used to fight Mikik in Mikmir?"
"Yes. I only had a Duam stone then, but the results were powerful."
"Why hoard them?"
Jen shook his head.
"Not hoard them. Hide them. If anyone figures out what they can do with these stones, there will be wars fought to get them. Elder Lurimora is hidden to most, so they will be safe here."
"And if I looked in that bag of yours, I don't suppose I would find a few stashed away?"
He smiled.
"Well, I thought it would be prudent to have a few around, for emergencies."
"I see."
Mirel walked farther inside, standing on the map of Unified Key Hall.
"Is this where she died?"
"It is,"
Jen replied, turning to stand in front of Mirel and placing his hands on her arms.
"She did it to save me. I wish it would have been me instead, Mirel. You must believe me. I hope you can forgive me for failing her in the end. I was stupid and naive to think that Joran and Saturnus could serve any other need besides their own. Not a day goes by that I don't regret my part in her death, even if the world was saved. I was terrified to tell you what happened. I wouldn't blame you if you hated me."
Mirel wrapped her arms around him and laid her head on his shoulder.
"I never blamed you. I know you loved her, and in a way it seems she was led to this end. She was forced by expectations and prophecy to marry Shatan. The sacrifice here she chose, and in this place she chose her path out of love for you. Perhaps it was only that kind of sacrifice that could save Kihal. And you should know that I could never hate you, although I will admit to some unkind thoughts over your absence for the last year."
Jen led her out of the Hall of Three Moons, and they meandered through the scented streets of Elder Lurimora in silence. Mirel glanced at his face, finding it sober and thoughtful. She leaned into him, wondering how badly his heart hurt and what questions troubled his mind.
"So, is Aethon still here?"
she asked as they approached a small pavilion by the lake.
"He left on an errand. He wanted to return his staff of office before coming back. I thought it best he not be here when you arrived. For all his penance and piety, I still cannot look on him without anger."
"You are wise," Mirel agreed. "I am not ready to confront him without killing him, nor do I think I will ever be."
Jen nodded. "He wishes to make amends to you, but having suffered from your wrath a time or two, I knew that he would best serve your feelings by simply never showing his face again." They ascended the pavilion, the structure delicately carved entirely from a white stone that gleamed in the sun. The sunlight played along the ripples on the lake, and they took a bench that afforded them a view of the dazzling water.
"What is weighing on you, Jen?"
Mirel asked. He took her hand in his.
"How to do right by you."
She swallowed hard, suddenly fearful. He was trying to find a way out, a way to politely part ways without harming her feelings. She fought down the urge to let her tears flow as they had so often for the last year. She wouldn't beg. She wouldn't throw herself at him. She wouldn't tease and flirt and seduce. She would let him go if that's what he wanted.
"You need not worry for me,"
she answered once she had control of herself.
"I am quite well provided for and can care for myself."
"I know you don't need me, Mirel."
"You never have,"
Jen said, taking her hand.
"Your independence is something I've always loved about you. I believe that when you choose to love a man, you do it freely because you want to be with him, not because you need a protector or a provider. I know you loved me that way once. After all that has happened, after I failed the one person you consider the most precious in the world, can I still be that man? My respect and love for you only grows every minute I'm with you. I would never part from you from this day onward if you could love me like that again, if when you looked at me, you didn't see the man who led your daughter to her death."
The tears refused to be shut away. She smiled at him, her heart beating with such strength she could feel it pounding.
"Oh, Jen, you think too much. Nothing could separate you from my love. I'm already yours in every way."
Leaning forward, he kissed her. It was loving, and it was sweet, and Morel simply closed her eyes and enjoyed it until he broke it and held her eyes.
"Thank you. You are, I would have you know, the most amazing, intimidating woman I have ever met, and I hope you never change."
A tickle on her hand turned Morel's gaze downward. A flowering vine had crept up the side of the pavilion and slithered at them, entwining about both their wrists, before blooming in deep red flowers, rich and luxurious to the touch.
"More of your magic?" Morel asked.
"No," Jen said. "Not my magic."
Morel knew what it meant and whose approval of their union it was, tears coming again to her eyes. She would have the gift she had always meant for her daughter when she wasn't busy wanting it for herself. They stared at the verdant ribbon of flowers about their wrists in wonder for many minutes, leaning together in quiet peace.
"It is my opinion that we are officially wedded now," Morel finally announced. "Thus we can avoid any marriage ceremonies, which mostly end in disaster anyway. And the honeymoon can begin."
"No, Morel," Jen laughed. "We will be proper and do this the right way. We just won't set a date. The first pure man we stumble across, we will press into service and be done. Though I really had hoped to see you all dressed up in a beautiful gown."
"You'll just have to settle for seeing me all undressed," she quipped. "But where will we go?"
"I had a little country place in mind. It's not Blackshire, but it has the wonderful rolling hills and trees and flowers."
"Sounds nice," she said dreamily.
She kissed him, and while it was loving and sweet, she put a little fire in it to encourage him to perhaps seek out a pure man rather than simply wait to stumble upon one.
"So it's settled then?" Maywin said, startling them both.
They laughed while the half-elf and Faleel looked on with some amusement.
"Yes," Jen answered. "It is settled." "Then she will accept our gift."
"What gift?" Morel asked.
"Faleel and I are ready to pass on now," Maywin explained. "We would give you our blood. With blood magic and a tristone, Jen can give you your youth. You can be as immortal as he is. Will you accept this gift from us?"
Morel said,
"Maywin, I don't know what to say."
Maywin's face scrunched.
"Yes, would be the word, I believe. Don't annoy me with any human sentimentality, if you don't mind."
"Yes, then,"
she answered, almost too stunned to speak.
"Very well," Maywin replied. "Then let's begin. I believe there is a pure man to be hunted for."
Faleel said something in Elvish, and Jen and Maywin smiled.
"What?"
Morel asked.
"Well," Jen explained, "Faleel says he has only one regret about passing on."
"And what is that?"
"That he won't be able to see what our children are like."